In December of 2001, Jeff Farrell quit his job as a tenured professor and moved back to his hometown, Fort Worth, Texas. With a place to live but no income, Farrell began a year-long experiment in living off the street. He became a dumpster diver, a trash picker. Riding around town on a found bicycle, he discovered an illicit underground world of street scavenging, recycling, and secondhand living. He tells the story of life in the underbelly of America's throwaway culture in his new book, Empire of Scrounge. Farrell told Steve Paulson how he spent his time that year.
Each day I would get up, spend, two, three, 4 hours out on my bicycle scrounging trash piles and dumpsters and the big rollaways, the temporary containers they put up at construction sites, and talking to folks, meeting people in back alleys or hopping in dumpsters with them, learning from them, and then come home and sort the tape. And that's certainly part of the process, learning how to make do with what I found. And then, of course, at night, you know, have a shower and relax and write down my ideas. And sort of in that sense, it turned into a book fairly easily.
What about food? Were you eating food that you found in the trash?
I was. Part of what I realized and talked with folks about is I think one thing that dissuades people from dumpster diving and makes them feel a certain revulsion at those of us who do is the sensibility of it being somehow filthy and unclean, you know, sort of all these cultural stigma that go with trash or discarded or waste. But the great majority of what's in dumpsters is not trash in any sense of filth, but just discarded goods. And the same holds true with food. For example, when people leave apartments or move out of houses, they often will dump all their kitchen supplies into a dumpster. And also, grocery stores buy in bulk and sell in bulk. And so if a wholesaler sells to a grocery a 20-pound bag of oranges and one of those oranges goes bad, the grocer then throws away the whole bag because it can't be sold.
Well, I would think the obvious thing for food is you go to the dumpsters behind the supermarket.
Yes, exactly. And one thing I found is that, you know, often, of course, perishable items don't actually perish, they just go past their due date. And so technically you don't want to sell something that expired yesterday, but in fact those cookies or chips or that loaf of bread is entirely edible. So in fact I found so much food and really so much of everything that I very quickly realized I needed to share it with other people. And so it came to be that, you know, I would alert my friends when I found, you know, 100 oranges and we'd have an orange feast.
So it sounds like you actually did pretty well scrounging through stuff. I mean, you found lots of things that had some value.
Oh, absolutely. I always want to be careful. It's not at all to say that dumpster diving is the social safety net and therefore we don't need unemployment benefits or housing for the homeless. That's certainly not true at all, and we should never assume that. But given the amount of waste that middle and upper class people engage in and given the relative affluence of our society, it is remarkable. In fact, here talking to you right now, the white shirt I'm wearing is scrounged, the bracelet on one arm, the watch on the other, my socks, not this pair of shoes, but others. I recently found two brand new pair of hiking boots. I don't know why they were thrown away, but they fit me fine. So yeah, everything from jewelry to tools to clothes to food, really anything you could go to a mall or a shopping center and purchase, if you think about it, is likely to be in a dumpster 6 months later. And I think that, of course, has to do clearly with the fact that people are consuming out of a sort of program desire. They're consuming for status as much as for need. And so that suggests that, therefore, they're throwing away things that aren't worn out. They're simply no longer high in status, no longer serving that original purpose.
Now, did you get to know the other people who were doing this? Is there a community of trash pickers?
There certainly is. And the greatest pleasure for me, along with the excitement and surprise of lifting the next lid and seeing what might be there, was this remarkable world. In fact, the reason I called the book I wrote about this, Empire of Scrounge, is I thought ahead of time there'd be a community. I thought I would run into folks with shopping carts, and I certainly did, and often very kind, decent people, by the way, very industrious, who taught me the ins and outs of different dumpsters and how to look for scrap metal. But along with those folks, there were minimum wage workers literally still wearing their Walmart uniforms or their, you know, chicken shack uniforms. I met a fellow who was disabled and whose disability check, he and his wife both disabled, their checks didn't pay the rent. So he had rigged his wheelchair with buckets and a long pole and rolled that wheelchair down the gutters picking up aluminum cans. He was one of my favorite people.
Did this make you angry, seeing all the stuff that was thrown out?
It certainly did. And one thing I would have never anticipated was how often I found items still in their packages or expensive sweaters with the tag still hanging from them.
Really? I'm surprised. Why wouldn't people, I mean, if they don't want it, why wouldn't they take it back to the store?
Well, I talked to folks about that, and there were two things, and I think these are actually interwoven in some ways. One was people said that I'm too busy to take it back to the store. I'm too busy to call Salvation Army. So that sense of panicked social life, you know, the quicker downloads, the quicker drive-through lattes, the hurry to get the kids at soccer. That sort of panic, I think, not only is perhaps existentially unhealthy, I think it also makes people more wasteful because they feel like there's not the time to be attentive to their lives or to the earth. But I think also, you know, not to be too sociological, back to Max Weber and the Protestant ethic and the spirit of capitalism, there's also a sense that we mix morality with wealth and success, and that there's, in this country especially, we see material success as a kind of moral imprimatur of goodness, and therefore we also see poverty or homelessness as somehow morally suspect. And so what I heard from a lot of folks was, you know, I made the money, I bought the sweater, that homeless person doesn't deserve it. And there's a real sort of meanness about their goods. Mm-hmm. And so what I began to discover over and over again was that people were actually, I think, very carefully sealing away their goods in these black plastic bags, burying them in trash receptacles. I often found that I would be digging through a pile of trash, and at the very bottom, the most carefully sealed away would be the most valuable items. And so it struck me that actually they were intending folks not to have access to those. They were intended to sort of make sure they ended up in the landfill. Just last month, I still do this, and just last month I hopped in a dumpster in a fairly affluent neighborhood, or in a parking lot that bordered that neighborhood, and here was a dumpster full of very carefully tied and sealed black trash bags that upon opening were, again, Neiman Marcus sweaters, L.L. Bean jackets. These were where the new hiking boots were. Obviously, by knowing how to read people's discards, obviously a wealthy young couple had done some spring cleaning, and instead of seeing that that got reused, had simply buried it in the dumpster. Illegally, I might add, it wasn't their dumpster. So that's where I both get angry, but also take, again, a real pride in knowing that all that's going to go, now that I found it, to the homeless shelter, to the women's shelter, that sort of thing.
So you did this big project. You sort of came to these conclusions about how wasteful we are. Where do you go from there?
Well, it's made me a new person. I found that being a scrounger did two things that were very important in my own life. One was it forced me to confront my sense of time. That panic I was accusing earlier others of having in terms of drive-through lattes and fast downloads, I realized was deep in my soul as well, that by being a writer and a professor and having grades due and deadlines for my publisher, that I was always in a hurry as well. And that being in a hurry makes you not a very pleasant person, and that scrounging taught me to slow down. I don't have the right to use this word, but I'll use it anyway. It taught me a kind of zen of not going out to find what you want, but learning to want what you find, of letting the universe make the first move, of killing your own ego and saying, maybe it's not so important that I find a red shirt with black buttons, but that I learn to enjoy whatever shirt I find and find a beauty in whatever color it is. So I found it to be almost, I dare say, a religious experience, mm-hmm. that being a scrounger taught me to let go of my own sense of wanting to control the world and somehow dominate time and space, and learn to flow with things and to embrace the surprise and the uncertainty of never knowing what the next dumpster might yield, or learning that that pair of shoes I found actually is a pretty cool pair of shoes and I can make them do. So in that sense, I guess I'm on a sort of a mission to promote this kind of way of life, not just as an ecologically sustainable one and one that perhaps involves social justice, but one that I think might make us better people as well.
Jeff Farrell teaches sociology, criminal justice, and anthropology at Texas Christian University. He's the author of Empire of Scrounge. He spoke with Steve Paulson.